Buongiorno, Brendan.
Witness me, Alan.
Yes, as we ride into Valhalla on a podcast, the Not a Thing podcast, episode 142. We're still in the throes of Mad Max fever, I think. I'm still very happy about it. I've talked to a number of people about it over the... It was nice because it's the second weekend was this last weekend. It was a long weekend, and I talked to like three or four more people about the movie. It was good.
It's a great movie with a great parody video, the Mario Kart Fury Road. Definitely check that out.
Yeah, it's an easy Google search away or whatever search engine you would choose.
If you're using Bing, what are you doing with your life?
Yeah, yeah, whatever, right.
Actually, no, Bing, I can understand. Yahoo search, you suck. Yahoo search is the worst search.
Not a thing.
Not a thing.
Not a thing. Well, a while ago, we were talking about how Comcast was the worst company, and I think it still is listed as like the worst company in terms of customer service and customer satisfaction, but
oh, definitely.
A while ago they were going to buy Time Warner Cable, and we proclaimed it not a thing, and the federal government, Federal Trade Commission agreed, and it was a decree that they should not merge because it would cause the largest single cable entity, and there was all sorts of talk of monopolies, et cetera, et cetera. So they decided to pull out of the merger. Interestingly enough, this week it was announced that another company is looking to buy Time Warner Cable. This time, Charter Cable, which is or Charter Communications, I think is the name. There, I have direct experience with them because they were the cable provider. When I was in college, back in the 90s, the 1990s, they back then were my like, this is the worst company I've ever dealt with. I can't imagine they've improved all that much in that amount of time. But I believe if they merged, they would be the second largest. I mean, I think Time Warner is already the second largest cable provider, but merging with Charter would make them closer to Comcast's market share. I think Comcast's market share was like 40-something percent, and then the merging of these two companies would be like 30, like high 30s percent kind of a thing. So you're looking at like three-quarters of the cable market between these three companies right now. I still think this is not a thing. I know that really in their market shares are distinct in that they don't overlap. So they're monopolies in their own regions. So that's already bad. But I think having a national kind of partial monopoly still sucks.
Yeah, it's not as bad as the Comcast deal, but it's still not a thing. It's still a Matryoshka doll of shittiness.
Yeah.
It's like, let's just add this and this, and it's going to hide that, but it's still a big pile of shit.
Matryoshka doll of shittiness. I think that might have to be the unofficial title for this show. not this show.
Wait, why, like, what are you saying?
Not this show as a whole. I mean this specific episode is what I mean.
Our podcast, 142 episodes of Matryoshka Doll of Shittiness.
But I think it's even sillier as companies are moving away from cable TV, or at least making roads to move away from cable TV and into more internet distribution. I mean, they are still, from what I understand, going to be owning a lot of the pipes for that internet distribution, so they're not going to lose out necessarily. But as a provider of that, it's still you know, promoting or rather suppressing any kind of competition or fairness or consumer rights So hopefully this also gets squashed by the FTC as not a thing. But
and don't forget, AT&T and DirecTV, that merger is still on course.
Right.
So the, even with this Charter-Time Warner merger, they'd still be third behind AT&T.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, as far as market share.
Yikes.
It's all bad. Three companies is not enough.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Yeah, hopefully that gets kind of worked out and sloshed around. Support smaller and local ISPs if you can. I know I'm a big fan of my ISP, which I will not name.
I'm a big fan of the ISP I work for, but I'm not going to name it. It's a conflict of interest. I have journalistic integrity.
Yes. Wow, we have journalistic integrity?
Yeah, sure, why not?
Okay, cool.
Sounds good. I can at least say it. It doesn't have to be true. It's the internet. You can do what you want.
It's true.
And that's how it should be.
As long as net neutrality exists, we're happy to talk about things or not talk about things, as is our wont. If you would like us to talk about certain things and would like to be on the air with us, that's great. If you don't want to be on the air, but you still want us to talk about things, feel free to sponsor us. You know, that's great too. Hashtag Flat Earth. We're happy to use our platform for your success.
we are currently both the hand and the puppet. If you want to be our hand, let us know.
Wait, which one of us is the hand and which one of us is the puppet?
No, it's a mutual thing.
Okay.
Like, you're 2.5 fingers, I'm 2.5 fingers.
All right, this is getting real bad real quick. we're going to move. We're going to move to another topic. I can't get this visual out of my head now. And so
why'd you have to make it visual? It's a non-visual medium, Alan.
Well, speaking of making things visual that are not, originally is a story about iRobot's Roombas, the Roomba robot vacuum cleaner, which I personally think is not a thing just on the face of it. It's a little robot that runs around your house and like kind of meagerly vacuums things up. It doesn't seem to do a great job in the houses that I've been in that have Roombas. You still kind of have to, like, you know, vacuum or sweep or whatever, because the algorithm for this thing is that it's like those cars that never fall off the table because they have a little sensor, and as soon as they hit the edge of a table, they'll back up. It's similar to that. The Roomba just kind of goes in a straight line, and when it hits something or is about to hit something, it turns a little bit and tries again. And then, in theory, it will track across the entire of your house vacuuming. And it's an interesting play, if not amazingly wasteful electrically and stuff. But they're looking to improve it, and the way they're going to improve it is that they are adding image recognition to it. So it'll have a camera, and it will roam around your house and identify objects in order to be able to successfully avoid them. And on the face of it, it sounds okay, except it's not doing that in the robot. What it's doing is it's taking pictures of your house and uploading them to someone who will identify what objects are and program the Roomba to move around them.
It's going to the cloud, Alan. The cloud is totally safe. There's nothing to fear from the cloud.
It's not algorithmic at all. There's an actual person staring at the inside of your house all day long, helping this robot learn stuff. What could possibly go wrong? It's not even inside iRobot's purview what's happening. They're subcontracting that out. So you're sending data of the inside of your house, possibly real time, to a third party whose integrity and data security you don't know about and can't control. And there's so much wrong with this. I don't even know where to begin.
I, gonna say the only Roomba I support is DJ Roomba from Parks and Rec, which is where you just stick an iPod with a speaker on your Roomba and let it roll around. Here, everybody loves DJ Roomba.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know about this. This is a little too similar to that. I think it was Vizio TVs that was going to have a feature that, and it was similar to the Amazon Echo. It's like, let's have things that are always on gathering information from your, from the inside of your house and transmitting it to the outside world.
I'm pretty sure we talked about that in an episode.
Yeah.
And how that is not a thing.
It's literally invading your privacy all the time. So I don't know if the invasion of privacy is worth a partially clean floor by a robot. I'm going to guess not. So this is another one that falls into the not a thing category fairly squarely. I feel like it shouldn't, I don't know. Even from an intelligence point of view, it shouldn't, this shouldn't be a problem. Like, you could just have it, you could have sensors around your house and they could all be local. Why does it have to upload anywhere? And why does a person have to see it? It's just,
well, I think the idea is eventually, once they've got enough data, they'll be able to develop an AI that can recognize things on its own without a human element. So at this point, like, that part of recognition is still in research and development. Like, they haven't finished that yet. But this is, they're just trying to make the Jetsons a reality, Alan. And all it's going to cost you is your privacy.
So would you feel more comfortable having an intelligent robot that could identify you roaming around your house?
No.
Right.
I want no robots in my house. You know my stance on robots.
Yeah. So we're
except DJ Roomba. If I could get a DJ Roomba, I would like that.
I feel like the feature set on that is, you know, it's more defined. It makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of features, and there's an article that we found that breaks down a bunch of features of how to make something desirable, essentially, for purchases. And the article is specifically talking about video games and video game consoles, and how there's kind of a balance between having new stuff and having the availability of stuff, and different ways of pricing these things out in order to differentiate the different systems. I mean, if a game is going to come out for Xbox, PlayStation, and Wii, or whatever, PC, 3DS, PSP, all of these different platforms, why does someone pick one over the other? And this article is going so far as to say the next evolution of game systems is to move to a subscription-based model, because there's a lot of play in that from a TV point of view. So we've talked at length about TV moving from the kind of large packages of cable channels to kind of a more, or ideally the thing that people mostly want is an a la carte kind of view of that. And the closest we can get with that, at least right now, is streaming of TV in an a la carte kind of fashion, on-demand fashion. So the way that you can buy HBO now or Netflix as its own kind of system or its own service, could you do that with games, or could you do that with video games? And I know that a lot of different companies have worked with that. So Steam is looking into things like that. The model around PlayStation Plus has stuff like that. The article mentioned how that Xbox has a similar system, although I'm not familiar enough with their their thing, but the whole kind of thing of it rests on the idea that people will play games for a limited amount of time. It's very unlikely that you would buy a game that you would play essentially forever, and so don't buy games, just rent them as you need them, essentially, or play in a manner that kind of fits with that. And I know that this model worked for a while, at least for companies like Blockbuster and Hollywood Video, both of which are essentially gone now.
Block what now? Holly what?
You know, there's still distribution models like that, like Redbox. You can still rent games. And
I think it's the overhead that toppled Hollywood Video and Blockbuster.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why Redbox can still exist.
Well, as moving things into, you know, maintaining a store of idle merchandise, essentially, is a physical store of idle merchandise in a digital age is rough. So for rentals, I think to work, you know, it's a possible thing for me. I know that I don't tend to replay games very, very often. There are a lot of games that you know, I play through once, and unless it's a like very, very good multiplayer game, I don't stick with it for more than, you know, a few months. So I see how this model could work. I mean, it still depends on pricing and everything else, but I'm wondering if it would work from a studio's perspective, because those gaming studios throw just tons of money into each of these launches, and if they're not getting, you know, kind of the big bump of sales that you would when you buy Call of Duty and then all of the DLC that it comes with and all of the extra perks that that come with those launches. I mean, I think it was for the latest Black Ops, I'd read something like if you had bought everything that you could possibly buy for the game, and we're just talking content and DLC, it's something like $150 for games that, you know, were like $60. So, you know, it's a lot of money. Whereas I don't think any of the like PlayStation Plus, I don't think is that much per year. So I think they would have to change the pricing significantly for that to work for the major studios. But I don't know. What do you think, Brennan? Where do you think about subscription based gaming?
I think it's a good idea for people who play regularly, mm-hmm. but at this point I play video games so infrequently that it wouldn't be worth it with the money that I already spend on streaming for video services. I wouldn't pay it, mm-hmm. but I know a lot of people who would and who do with services like Gamefly.
Oh, I used to use Gamefly. That was ages ago.
Yeah, that's still a thing.
They used to send you physical discs.
They still do.
Yeah, I think the thing that makes me come back to it is there are definitely a few games that I will go back to. And those are the games that I think I would definitely miss out on a system that would be subscription based. And these are mostly indie games, so they may not even subscribe to those kind of larger models. But like I just found myself in this last week, ever since traveling, I've been playing the game Faster Than Light almost constantly for the last week and a half. And it's a game that I don't know if we ever talked about on the show.
We've talked about it, I think, two or three times.
Okay, all right. Well, it's one of my favorite games. And it's one that I think probably doesn't fit the model of play it and then go away. I mean, I've definitely gotten a kind of resurgence bump out of it. And I mean, I think if it's anything like Netflix is for video, they will rotate content in and out based on licensing. And so I would think gaming would be that way too. You can't just have, you know, servers of games hanging out for people to play. So I think the I think some hybrid of it, like if you could buy a game and play it even when you're not subscribed, that's really the thing for me, because I think the subscription model, well, again, I agree with you. The only way it works is if you're playing it enough to make that subscription worth it, and I don't know if I do anymore. I guess I'm just not the hardcore gamer that I used to be.
Well, I got to know, Alan, in the week you were playing FTL, how many times did you actually beat the mothership?
Oh, I'm pretty good at beating the mothership with a Kestrel. I can beat it as long as I pick up another burst laser or a flak, I can absolutely beat the mothership. I've been trying to
go cloaking.
I usually don't do cloaking. I usually just go guns a-blazing.
Okay.
I have been playing with the is it the Mantis? Yeah, the Mantis ships, and turning them into boarding. I will just board the hell out of ships and kill everyone on board. It's great. The only thing that it doesn't work on is the automated ships, but it's usually not a problem.
Those are usually easier to destroy.
Yeah.
Play FTL, everybody.
But another couple games that are, I think, that are fitting in that don't fit this model have just recently come out, and they are both kind of, again, that independent game, small company model, where I think, you know, those indie developers really need that money to go directly to them and not be caught up in some subscription doling out system, which they would probably make next to no money on. And so, like, things like just smaller games that are mostly mobile, but then also for consoles, like they just the company Double Fine, where the creators of the original, like, kind of LucasArts adventure games released Grim Fandango, which is they updated an older LucasArts adventure game whose license they had purchased away, and was able to update all of the textures and make it look good on a PS4 and everything else. And I just remember really enjoying playing that game, and it's probably not going to get, you know, the large play that like a Halo or a Call of Duty would get. And so it's, again, that, you know, the small, it's still kind of a larger game. I mean, the company behind it, Double Fine, you know, was notorious for having that huge Kickstarter for, you know, like, it was at the time the largest Kickstarter for a video game. And that game actually also just came out, Broken Age. And both of these games are not kind of the quote unquote hardcore gaming, like, central thing. And so these are the ones that I don't know would fit the subscription model. But
unless you could have a subscription service based entirely on indie games.
Well, I'm guessing that that Steam and other companies are looking into things like that, because I know that there are enough kind of, there is almost like a second tier of publishing, right? Like, I think Telltale Games really fits in this as well. Like, it's a small game, a lot of people are going to play it, but it's probably not one that people are going to replay. And so from the small gaming point of view, it deserves, like, you know, attention and care, and so it's going to be probably done really well. But from a like replayability point of view, it's probably not going to be very high. I think it fits from the subscription model in that, you know, you'll like it for a little while and then you'll go away to something else. But I don't know if the attention level that it would get would be high enough to merit being included in the subscription models of like PlayStation Plus and things like that, or whatever this new thing would be. But I know that there are more communities for independent game makers. Like if you look up like the folks behind the Humble Bundles, their whole thing is selling bundles of games that are made by smaller developers at pretty low prices. I'm not sure how that works, but it seems like, I guess because they're bundling them, so they're getting more buzz around individual games, and then you're getting other games too, so they tend to make more for the developers directly. But there are a number of systems that that go along with that model, including Humble Bundle, and I know Steam has a indie specific channel in their system as well. So I think people do recognize that the indie developers are different than the kind of major developers, the EAs and Rockstars of the world. But
Alan, it's in the game.
indeed it is. So hopefully those systems can thrive kind of together. You know, people just want to play games is really what it comes down to. I know I do. So speaking of playing games and Grand Theft Auto, we talked about Rockstar a little bit.
Long walk.
driving cars, as we talked about earlier, is real fun, right? We were talking about Mad Max at the beginning of the show.
Gasoline.
Yeah, gasoline. It's good stuff as long as you can get it without too much craziness. And Audi has come out with some stuff. Some scientists in their departments have been playing with science and nature and being
what
really
has that
crazy.
Ever gone wrong?
Yeah, how could it go wrong? In this case, they're using purely natural means, supposedly. So there's no oil or petrochemical products involved, but they're able to make synthetic gasoline, which normally is full of natural processes in order to make. It just takes a really, really long time. They are using an unspecified biomass in order to make the gasoline, but it from
my money's
all,
on hemp.
Yeah, from all intents and purposes, it looks and works and combusts like gasoline. They're saying that it comes out at like 100 octane, so it's good fuel for racing. But in theory, is easily created from the base element. So it's, you know, hydrocarbons. So they're using that. I'm a little concerned that they don't specify what the biomass is. You know, do they breed some poor animal to excrete gasoline when fed like certain things or something like that?
If that poor animal is penguins, I support it. I'm kidding. I don't support the mistreatment of any animals. Well,
yeah. Well, it might be kind of like the other things that we've heard of that that are engineering of chemicals. Like I believe last week we talked about yeasts that can engineer specific scent and flavor compounds. It might be that kind of thing where they're using a bacteria or something to generate the gasoline or gasoline-like components that are more easily returned to gasoline. I think it's an interesting kind of setup. I mean, the article barely talks about how diesel gas can be also generated naturally. Biodiesel is a real thing and can be generated from essentially vegetable oils that can be re-extracted and then changed into a combustible fuel. Although the article did mention that they are looking into ways of making diesel specifically without biomass at all. And so I'm really wondering how that works. And I think these are good things. These are ways to look into alternative fuel sources, but it really just reduces the impact on or the efficacy of kind of major oil producers. I don't know if it necessarily is a greener solution.
Well, supposedly this is carbon neutral.
Including the combustion of it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Supposedly.
That's impressive.
That's the problem with these other renewable energies like solar or wind or whatever. We're still going to need cars.
Yeah.
So if we this is the type of thing that we need to make that much more widespread and actually make a difference.
Yeah. Or we can just all get Teslas. That would be kind of nice too.
Yeah. Or maybe I think that's good. Batteries are a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. They are.
There's a limited amount of precious metals that you need to make the batteries.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know I would still favor a gas car over an electric car. Unless that electric car was a Tesla, and unless unless that electric car was also given to me, because Teslas are kind of expensive. but yeah,
got an Audi.
Yeah, right. So full disclosure.
Be first in line.
Full disclosure, I do have an Audi, and you can almost say my scientists made this up.
Yeah, we do have journalistic integrity, after all.
As established earlier in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the one thing about this process is that it's still in early stages, and they're able to make gasoline in the they made it sound like, you know, cups and liters, and not, you know, not at the gallon level or anything. So it'll be a little while before they kind of work the kinks out and make that make sense at scale. But it's neat stuff coming out.
I could see this being another one of the topics that we hit on when it's first starting, and a year from now we'll have a pretty cool update.
Yeah. Maybe we'll have
like Bitcoin. Gas. Remember when Bitcoin was a thing?
Actually, I did just read an article about how they're looking to change the Bitcoin protocol. So Bitcoin, as I don't know if we've ever talked about, works on what's called a blockchain, and that's the record of all transactions that have occurred in the system, and that's how all of the it's a decentralized currency, because all of the transactions ever live in this history chain. Well, that history chain has a finite size, and it's not approaching the limit, but they're looking at different ways to work around it. And if they change the limit in order to accommodate kind of a longer time frame and a larger number of transactions, it has a bunch of impacts on a lot of things, including the mining of Bitcoins, which I haven't looked recently, but I remember it was almost a year ago. It may have even been longer than a year ago, and we were talking about Bitcoin mining, and I'd set up a Bitcoin miner just to see what's going on with it. I have to go look at that and see if it's even still alive.
You could be rich, Alan.
Who knows? Probably not, though.
Let's go check on that right now.
Yeah, knowing how those things work, I don't think we're there yet. In fact, okay, here we go. We are still looking at 7 months.
Before you get one?
No, it's not even a single Bitcoin. That's the payout level, which is how much is that? It's not very much. It's like a quarter of a Bitcoin.
Wow, you're getting hosed.
Yeah, it's not a good system.
Shut it down, Alan.
This is the thing. Like, the Bitcoin miners who legitimately do this and actually do make money will suddenly be making a lot less money if they change the blockchain protocol in the way that they're looking at it, which will just fix the amount of coins that
what's this going to do to the Dogecoin market? That's what I want. No one wants to know.
Well, hopefully Bitcoins stay a thing. I think it's an interesting idea. If only to not tie up large amounts of money in a currency that, essentially disappears. That would be probably bad. I'm sure that has implications in the world currency market somewhere. But I don't know. Maybe we'll have an update about that soon. So that was a pretty quick show. I think we have to wrap it up a little early. It's been a long weekend. It'll be a short week. So that fits kind of nicely in our plans. We'll be back on the air next week. I'm looking to get a guest. It may work out. I'm crossing my fingers. So we'll see. We'll see.
You're crossing two fingers or your two and a half fingers?
It was the two and a half. The two and a half on my side. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, it's like the left arm and like half of its mouth.
Or do you like you cross two and then your half and my half Voltron cross?
Oh, that'd be kind of impressive because then we could both like work like...
That's like triple luck.
or it all cancels it out and...
No, if it's uneven, it's still a plus one.
Okay. It's like negative, double negative is a positive, but three negatives is a negative again.
Let's just cross our fingers.
Right on. I'll talk to you next week, Brendan.
Till next time, Alan.